Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I'm a resident. This is episode 173 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And this podcast, I'm going to be calling this the Clutch Immunodeficiency Diseases Podcast. This should be a short one, so let me just get right into it. So what if you get a question about a boy that has had let's say this is like a three-year-old boy, and they say over the last 2 years, this kid has had multiple episodes of streptococcal pneumonia and, just a lot of GI infections with Giardia and whatnot. What are you thinking about? What's the primary thing you're thinking about? Well, I hope you're thinking about Bruton's agammaglobulinemia, right? Remember, this is actually inherited in an X-linked recessive fashion, right? So Bruton's will be a question in a boy on your USMLE exams. That's one of those high yield things you want to keep at the back of your mind, right? And the thing is, sometimes the MBA may not even ask you just for the diagnosis. They may want you to know the cell type that's affected, right? Hopefully you remember that it's a problem with B cells, right? It's a problem with antibody production, right? And it's essentially a problem with humoral immunity. I'm just giving you the different terms you may see as answer choices on the USMLE exams, right? So Bruton's agammaglobulinemia, sometimes it's known as the X-linked agammaglobulinemia. And again, like I said, it's an inherited defect. It affects B cells. And really the mutation that causes the disease, right? It's like a mutation in a gene that codes for something called a Bruton's tyrosine kinase. It's a mutation in a tyrosine kinase that essentially helps you with B cell differentiation. So the thing is, when you have that mutation, you have very low levels, so essentially no B cells, no mature B cells, right? And these people effectively have no plasma cells and almost no antibodies, right? And again, like I said, X-linked, so it's going to be in boys on your exams, right? And the thing is, usually these boys tend to have recurrent infections after the age of 6 months because the antibodies from mom, those IgG antibodies that cross the placenta, kind of wear out after a six-month period. That passive immunity kind of goes away, right? So these people tend to get a lot of recurrent infections with pyogenic encapsulated organisms, right? So strep pneumo, H flu, Neisseria meningitidis, things of that nature, right? And some physical exam findings you'd actually want to keep at the back of your mind with Bruton's is these kids tend to have poorly developed tonsils. They'll have a very tiny spleen, right? Because again, essentially you don't have B cells around to proliferate. So you don't need these organs to get big. So these people tend to have tonsillar hypoplasia, splenic hypoplasia, and they may not even have a lymphadenopathy. They usually don't have lymphadenopathy on MBME exams. That's a very unique feature you want to keep at the back of your mind, right? And if you do a peripheral smear, again, you will not find much in the way of B lymphocytes, and their immunoglobulin levels will be profoundly low. And really the way you treat Bruton's is, you just give IVIG every month, every 30 days. And these patients, if they get these sinopulmonary infections, typically on MBME exams, you give them amoxicillin. That tends to help pretty well. And then all this pulmonary care to help them clear up all those clear up those secretions from the nasty infection that they have. So that's what I'll say about Bruton's. The thing is, Bruton's has a close cousin that you may see on MBME exams. But there's a close cousin called CVID. It kind of looks like Bruton's, but it's not necessarily Bruton's. It's probably not as severe as Bruton's. Unlike Bruton's that is inherited in an X-linked recessive fashion, there's another disease known as CVID, common variable immunodeficiency. It tends to be inherited in an autosomal fashion, right? So usually it's autosomal recessive, right? But there are many other mechanisms of inheritance. So I'll say that in general, the mechanism of inheritance is not something you may necessarily see on your USMLE exams. But you can basically, what I'm saying with that autosomal inheritance is that essentially it can show up in men and women. So it's not just going to be a boy disorder on MBME exams like you have for Bruton's agammaglobulinemia. But really, it's also kind of the same problem, right? These people have issues with B cell differentiation, right? So they will have very low levels of immunoglobulins. Most immunoglobulins are low in these people as well. Sometimes there are some rare people that have CVID where all their immunoglobulins are low, right? But these people also have low levels of immunoglobulins. And the thing is, usually these people, they tend to get all these respiratory and GI infections, but it's very high yield to know that their infections tend to start in the second decade of life. So usually past the age of 10 on MBME exams versus Bruton's, where their symptoms begin at 6 months of life. So that's one key difference you want to keep in mind there. And the thing is, people that have CVID on MBME exams, they tend to have a lot of skin problems. and they also tend to get like an increased predominance of an increased preponderance of autoimmune diseases, right? And some of the classic things you may see in people that have CVID on NBMEs, they may have like bronchiectasis, they may have like alopecia, they may have like polyarteritis nodosa, they can have like vitiligo, they can have like pyoderma gangrenosum. These are just all like weird, like essentially if you see a person that has an immunodeficiency disease with like weird skin findings, one of the things you want to entertain is CVID, right? And the thing is, again, if you, these people tend to have, again, very low levels of immunoglobulins. One sneaky way your friends at the NBME may try to slot it into an exam is they may tell you that a person gets a vaccine, like a person gets some kind of, let's say like the pneumococcal vaccine, and they for whatever reason, they don't seem to, they still keep getting like pneumococcal infections. And then you check and you notice that they're actually like non-immune to strep pneumonia. You're like, why is this person not generating antibodies to this infection? That may be a clue on the NBME exams, because when do people get many vaccines, right? When they're kind of like teenagers, right? So, although I mean, you should also get a lot of vaccines as a kid. But that's one sneaky way your friends at the NBME may want to present it, right? So again, they'll have low levels of immunoglobulins. They may not respond appropriately to vaccination, so they may not generate antibodies, right? And in general, again, it may look a lot like Bruton's A gamma globulinemia, right? But the thing is, usually for people that have CVID, you'll actually find B cells on a peripheral smear. This is not something that obtains in like mature, you'll find like mature B cells, like you, this is not something you necessarily see in Bruton's, but you'll see B cells on a peripheral smear in a person that has a CVID, right? And really the way you treat CVID is, you know, you give IVIG as well, pretty much. And one thing you want to keep in mind is one of the most common causes of death in people with CVID is actually lymphoma, okay? So whenever these people have like, you know, like big lymphadenopathy, you just want to go ahead and biopsy that lymph node just to make sure that those people don't have lymphoma. And then the next major immunodeficiency disorder I'll talk about, what if they give you a question about a patient? Let's say this patient, you know, they're getting a blood transfusion and then they become profoundly hypoxic. They start to have like intense stridor, intense wheezing. What do you think this person has? Well, I hope you're thinking about IgA deficiency, right? IgA deficiency. Basically, the problem with IgA deficiency, right? I mean, the classic presentation, I'll talk about that in a second. But the big thing you want to keep at the back of your mind is that these people, they essentially have like failure of differentiation of like your, like the terminal like IgA positive B cells, right? In fact, this is actually the most common primary immunodeficiency disease, believe it or not, right? And the thing is, these people, they may actually form, because they have like this IgA deficiency, they may actually form antibodies against IgA, right? So it's those antibodies that they form against IgA that can actually cause those anaphylactic reactions with blood transfusions, right? And these people, right, they tend to get, because remember, the IgA is the guardian of the mucosa. So these people tend to get like recurring respiratory infections, recurring GI infections. And for whatever reason, these people also tend to have like a very high prevalence of like food allergies and other like kinds of like atopic disorders. So those are things your friends on the NBME may throw into an exam, right? And again, many of these people, they may not have any, you know, significant symptoms until like later in life. And then they will keep having like, again, recurring respiratory infections, recurring GI infections, especially with Giardia. And they may also get like anaphylactic reactions with a blood transfusion, right? And the thing is, typically, right, if you do like immunoglobulin studies, you notice that, you know, all their immunoglobulin levels are normal, with the exception of IgA. The IgA levels will be decreased. And really, the way you treat this is, you know, you treat their recurrent, you just essentially treat the infections that they have. Another thing you can do is you can maybe consider like just giving, like replacing those immunoglobulins that they are missing. But they are, to be honest with you, they are really not going to test that on an NBME exam. I mean, one thing you may also want to keep in mind is these people, right? You want to be careful when you're doing blood transfusions. You want to like leukoreduce the blood transfusion they're getting, because you don't want those IgAs to, you know, be in the serum, because those if you give them IgA, they can have those anaphylactic reactions, or they can then start making antibodies that can put them at high risk for anaphylactic reactions in the future. So those are, again, all big things you want to keep at the back of your mind with IgA deficiency. Now, what if they give you a question about like a girl, right? And this girl, you know, she's been having like these like progressive like neurological impairments. She has like problems walking, so she's like losing motor milestones. And they tell you that she has like telangiectasias in the eye. and she has like mild intellectual disability. What are you thinking about here? So this is actually ataxia telangiectasia, right? Ataxia telangiectasia. I remember, right, this is an autosomal recessive disease, right? So for the most part, this can show up in both boys and girls on NBME exams, right? And typically the thing that happens, right, these people have like neurological impairment, they have like mild intellectual disability, they tend to have like recurrent infections with like bacteria, viruses, and fungi. So it's almost like a B and a T cell problem in a sense. They tend to have like cerebellar ataxia, right? So they'll have like problems walking. And then another classic finding is they'll have telangiectasias, and they can have telangiectasias on the skin, but they can also have telangiectasias in the eye. Okay, those are all high yield things to know. And if you're wondering, okay, Divine, what is the pathophysiology? The thing is, these people, they tend to have like a mutation in a gene known as ATM, you know, like an ATM machine. So like they have like mutations in the ATM gene. It's like around chromosome 11. And essentially, that gene regulates like your cellular response to double-stranded DNA breakage, right? So the problem with these people is because they have issues with responding to double-stranded DNA breaks, they tend to have like a lot of sensitivity to like ionizing radiation. So these people probably should not be getting x-rays or staying in the sun too much. Because again, remember that the radiation of x-rays can cause those DNA breaks. So these people tend to have like increased risk of like cancers, leukopenias, right? And the classic presentation is the child will have ataxia first, okay? These people will have like ataxia first, right? So they'll have trouble walking. You may say, oh, this person has ataxia. Let me administer the Romberg test. I've talked about the Romberg test ad nauseum in many podcasts, so I'm just going to keep going. I talked about it in my neuro podcast. Remember, the Romberg test is a test of dorsal column function, right? So the thing is, these people tend to have a negative Romberg test. In one of my future podcasts, I'll talk about Friedreich's ataxia. Friedreich's ataxia, right? Those people also tend to have ataxia, but their Romberg test actually tends to be positive. I'll talk about the pathophysiology behind this in a different podcast, but that's like a key thing you want to keep at the back of your mind, because the thing is, sometimes your friends at the NBME, they will write a Friedreich's ataxia question to look like a lot like an ataxia telangiectasia question. Although Friedreich's ataxia, right, tends not to be associated with immunodeficiency problems. But the thing is, the NBME will try to push that intellectual disability like real hard so that you get them confused. So remember, people that have ataxia telangiectasia, they tend to have a negative Romberg sign. People that have Friedreich's ataxia, they tend to have a positive Romberg sign. Okay? So people with ataxia telangiectasia, they have the ataxia first. And then after they have that ataxia, it shows up within the first few months to years of life. And then between the ages of 3 to 6, they begin to develop those telangiectasias on the skin and on the eye, right? And then after the telangiectasias develop, they then start getting these recurrent sinopulmonary infections, right? And really, for the most part, these people have like very low levels of white blood cells, very low levels of IgA. So I guess maybe one thing that can help you here is people that have ataxia telangiectasia, they have low white blood cell count and low IgA levels, versus people that have IgA deficiency, they'll have a normal white blood cell count but low IgA levels. Okay, that's the way you kind of like keep these two things as straight. And the thing is, really, the only way you can treat ataxia telangiectasia is, you can give them IVIG, you can give them antibiotics to treat their infections. But these people, they tend to get very nasty hematologic malignancies like Hodgkin's, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, leukemias, and that's what kills them. These people tend to die pretty early in life. So, it's not a great disease to have. That's just terrible, terrible, terrible. And again, remember I said ataxia shows up first, telangiectasias show up afterwards, and then they begin to have the recurrent sinopulmonary infections. So just use the name of the disease, ataxia telangiectasia, to help you remember what comes first and what comes second. And then the next immunodeficiency I'll talk about is SCID, right? So SCID, right? So like the severe combined immunodeficiency. The thing is, it can arise for many different reasons, right? So typically, they don't usually ask like the mechanism of inheritance, because actually people that have SCID, there's actually some causes of SCID that are associated with autosomal recessive inheritance. There are some causes of SCID that are associated with like X-linked inheritance. The thing is, some key pathophysiologies you want to be able to lay down in your mind for purposes of the USMLEs is, one common cause of SCID on the USMLE exams is an adenosine deaminase deficiency. deficiency of adenosine deaminase, I described the mechanism behind that causing immunodeficiency with like apoptosis of lymphocytes in my biochemistry video. So I'm gonna like let that go for now, because again, I want to be done with this podcast fairly quickly. But basically, deficiencies of adenosine deaminase, and also if a person has like a mutation in the interleukin 2 receptor, like the gamma chain, that is also associated on MBME exams with the development of SCID, or severe combined immunodeficiency. And again, it's a combined immunodeficiency, right? So these people will have problems with like B cells and T cells. So they will get recurrent bacterial infections, viral infections, fungal infections. Like, there's no holds barred here with regards to the kinds of infections these people will get. And one thing I'll just say is, like, there's this one principle I use a lot. I know I've mentioned it in different podcasts, but I'll just mention it here. There's this principle I use a lot with immunodeficiency disorders that I found to be very helpful. Just look at the bug pattern that these people have on exams, and that will typically lead you in a nice direction as to what the likely answer is. So if, for example, in the QSTEM, they're just giving a lot of like bacterial infections, it's going to be some kind of B-cell problem, some kind of humoral immunity problem, some kind of antibody problem, right? Contrast that with a person that has recurrent like viral infections or like TB or pneumocystis jirovetsi, that should tip you off more towards like a T-cell problem, okay? That's just a high-yield dichotomy you want to keep at the back of your mind on exams. You know, I don't know, it just tends to help me a lot. So like, you know, T-cell problem, a cell-mediated immunity problem. So again, these people, their B cells, their T cells essentially don't work. And these people will start having like nasty, nasty infections from birth. This one is not like, oh, let's chill till you hit 6 months. No, 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 no. These people start having nasty infections from birth. And again, they will get recurrent infections with, again, all sorts of pathogens. These people tend to get like abscesses everywhere, like deep skin abscesses, abscesses, like liver abscesses, like abscesses in many different organs, right? And really, if you get some labs on these people, they'll have like, again, super low white blood cells, all immunoglobulin levels will be low, right? And one classic thing they may tell you on an MBME exam is that these people have an absent thymic shadow on a chest x-ray, okay? Absent thymic shadow on a chest x-ray, think about SCID, but also think about DeGeorge syndrome, right? Because again, remember, DeGeorge syndrome is a T-cell defect with hypocalcemia as well. Right, so these kids, those kids will also have an absent thymic shadow on a chest x-ray. And if they want to go all basic science on you on step 2 CK or step 3, one thing they could also throw in is that people that have these disorders will have like hypoplasia of the paracortex of lymph nodes. That's a very high yield thing to keep at the back of your mind, because remember, the paracortex is the T-cell area of a lymph node, right? And really, the way you treat people that have SCID, right, like, many of these people die pretty quickly, but you know, you give them a ton of antibiotics, you give them IVIG, you do like a bone marrow transplant. And these people, one unusual thing that many people seem, for whatever bizarre reason, to get wrong on the USMLE exams, is that these people should not get any kind of live attenuated vaccine. If not, they will get a life-threatening infection and die. So you don't want that for these people, right? So vaccines like, you know, MMR, yellow fever, varicella, rotavirus, the inhaled influenza vaccine, not good ideas for these people, okay? Not good ideas for these people. That's a nice way they can integrate those two things on the USMLE exams. Now, what if they give you a question about a kid, and it's a boy, right? And this boy, you know, has like PTKI on the skin, and they get some labs and they tell you that, oh, you know, this person's platelet count is like 34,000, and this kid has like these patches on his skin, like these eczematoid lesions on the skin, and again, a lot of recurring infections. What are you thinking about here? Well, I would really hope you're thinking about Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome, right? Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome. This one is very easy to identify on the USMLE exams. So unfortunately, they don't test it as commonly as I would like them to test it, so that more people can obviously get more questions right on their tests. But the thing is, in Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome, right, big things you want to remember, it's inherited in an X-linked recessive fashion, right? And the mutation is in a gene known as the WASP, so W-A-S-P, the WASP gene. Okay, and again, it will be, because it's X-linked recessive inheritance, it'll be in a boy on your exam, right? And the thing is, you may say, okay, Divine, why does this WASP gene defect cause any problems? Well, here's the deal. The thing is, when you have a mutation in that WASP gene, right, you will essentially begin to have a lot of trouble with like the signaling cascade that leads to like the appropriate movement of like actin filaments, right? So that's what causes many of the Like, I mean, that links into many other things that probably is not appropriate to discuss in a podcast that I'm trying to, like, hopefully keep to, like, a very short time frame. Maybe I'll talk about the pathophysiology in some future podcast. But basically, these people, the classic thing you may see on an NBM exam is, you know, they will have, like, thrombocytopenia, right? So instead of putting thrombocytopenia, they may use PTKI. They may say, oh, physical exam is notable for skin PTKI. Once you see PTKI on the skin in an NBM exam, they're essentially telling you that this person has some kind of thrombocytopenia business going on. So, you know, thrombocytopenia, and if you even do like a bone marrow smear or whatever, you'll see that these people's platelets are like very tiny, right? So these people have thrombocytopenia, they'll have eczema. The reason they have eczema is that people that have what's called Aldrich syndrome, they actually tend to have very high levels of IgE. Okay, so these people tend to have like eczema, and again, they get like a lot of recurring infections. And then, like I said, again, I said on the skin, PTKI telling you that they have thrombocytopenia, eczema because they have very high levels of IgE. And if you really, like, you know, look further, I guess maybe dig a little further into this, these people also tend to have like a very high risk of like malignancy. It's just in general, people that have immunodeficiency diseases, they tend to have very high risk of malignancy. Because remember, your immune system helps you like deal with cancers, right? Especially like your natural killer cells. So if your immune system is not working all that great, you can begin to really get into a lot of trouble with malignancies. I mean, like, there's this whole thing with this, what do they call this thing? PD-L, like anti-PD-L1, whatever therapy, right? It's all based on sprucing up your immune system to kill cancers, right? So whenever you have an immunodeficiency disease, your immune system is not appropriately spruced up, right? So that can increase your risk of malignancy. So really, people that have this, like, what's called Aldrich syndrome, they have, like, very high risk of, like, autoimmune diseases, very high risk of malignancies, especially, like, leukemias and lymphomas. And the thing is, when you do some labs on these people, like, they'll have actually, like, you know, like, low to normal levels of, like, IgG, IgM. And they'll have high levels of IgA and IgE, okay? They'll have high levels of IgA and IgE. Again, if you notice, I'm talking about, like, specific immunoglobulin levels with these disorders. These are clues that can lead you in one direction versus the other on the USMLE exams, right? And then if you do, like, you know, like, the way you really establish the diagnosis is, you know, you do like some kind of flow cytometry, and that will help you like detect like low levels of like expression of the WASP, of the WASP gene. And really the way you treat this is, you know, you give them antibiotics if they get sick. You give like IVIG. There's really no great treatment for this. Really, the only way you can cure this disorder is you do like a hematopoietic, like, stem cell transplant. That's really the only thing that can help these kids. Now, the next immunodeficiency disease I guess I'll go ahead and talk about is like leukocyte adhesion deficiency, right? So this one, essentially the thing that happens is you have neutrophils, and these neutrophils, they cannot like leave the circulation to get into tissues. I mean, there are many types of leukocyte adhesion deficiency. I wouldn't worry about the specific types, but some key mutations you want to, you know, like identify is like, they may tell you that, oh, like, what's the pathophysiology behind yada, yada, yada disease. Think about things like, you know, like mutations in like integrin, in mutations in like CD18. CD18 is necessary for adhesion of your neutrophils to the endothelium. Or you may see like NBME questions that ask about like mutations in like E-selectin, right? Or mutations in like Sialyl-Lewis X. These are just all things that can cause leukocyte adhesion deficiency. And the thing is, these people, the classic presentation on NBM exams is, these people will have like infections, right? And they would not really form pus. But another thing you may also see on NBM exams is, these people may have like delayed separation of the umbilical cord, okay? Delayed separation of the umbilical cord. And one thing that your friends on the USMLE love to test is, actually one very nifty way they present this on exams is, a person will have like an unusual leukocytosis, but you have like no real signs of infection. So you may say, okay, Divine, why is that true? Well, think about it. Remember, like, a very big pool of your white blood cells actually just stick to the endothelium and just hang out there, right? But if you have mutations in, I mean, look, notice the name of the disease, leukocyte adhesion deficiency. If your leukocytes cannot adhere properly, then the thing that will happen is that you'll begin to have essentially like those leukocytes like in a demarginated state where they're just in the bloodstream. So if you see a person that has a leukocytosis and they have no signs of infection, think about leukocyte adhesion deficiency, or if they have an infection, they have, because remember, right, if you get an infection, you get like a leukocytosis, that's a normal response. But these people get like a leukocytosis that may be out of proportion to the kind of infection they have. If you see that, again, you want to think about leukocyte adhesion deficiency. And really, the way you make the diagnosis is, you know, you can make the diagnosis with like with a flow cytometry. Again, they'll never really test treatment on your MBM exams. But if they did, one thing you can do is you can consider like a bone marrow transplant. That may be helpful in some selected patients, especially in some specific types of leukocyte adhesion deficiency. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that this patient keeps having like a lot of like lymphadenopathy, or this patient keeps having a lot of abscesses, and whenever they biopsy those abscesses, they always come back with like staph aureus. What are you thinking about? Well, this is CGD, right? This is CGD. And again, on MBM exams, CGD will show up in a guy because it's inherited in an X-linked recessive fashion, okay? So it's common in males. And remember, right, it's a problem with neutrophils, okay? They'll try to trick you on your exam to convince you that it's a problem with macrophages or a problem with B cells. Do not choose those on a test. Go with neutrophils, okay? So it's a problem with the oxidative burst process in neutrophils, okay? So why do we have issues with CGD, right? So the thing is, or maybe let me talk about that. I've kind of talked about the classic presentation. The thing that happens is that these people, they have a mutation in an enzyme known as NADPH oxidase, right? So if you have a mutation in NADPH oxidase, that can, that would render, like make it very difficult for you to deal with catalase positive organisms. And again, there are many catalase positive organisms, staph aureus, E. coli, candida, aspergillus, klebsiella. But the big one, I feel like almost like 95% of USMLE CGD questions go after, is recurrent abscesses and lymphadenopathy with staph aureus. That's like the classic pathognomonic presentation for chronic granulomatous disease. And again, these people will get, again, a lot of, like, again, staph aureus infections. They may have like granulomas. That's why it's called chronic granulomatous disease. These people tend to have like a lot of granulomas in like their GI tracts, in their GU tracts. So they can have like an ulcerative colitis like presentation, believe it or not, on MBM exams, right? So those are all like big things you want to keep at the back of your mind. So now, how do we make the diagnosis of CGD? So the thing is, you know, way back in the dark ages, the diagnosis was established with a nitro blue tetrazolium test. But the thing is, your friends at the MBM realize that, you know, everyone has, you know, essentially memorized that. And also, it's kind of like moving with the times. Essentially, no human being these days does the nitro blue tetrazolium test. So the thing that happens on the exam these days is there's this test called the dihydrorhodamine test. It's like the DHR-123 test. That's like the preferred test. And it's kind of like the nitro blue tetrazolium test, but it's just more advanced and it's much easier and it's much more sensitive. So that's what you should be looking for on MBM exams. Really, for the most part, these people, the way you treat CGD on MBM exams is you give interferon gamma, okay? You give interferon gamma. That tends to like spruce up the immune system cells to fight infection more appropriately. But that's about as much, I think, as I'll say about a CGD. And again, X-linked recessive inheritance, so it's going to be in boys on your USMLE exams. And then, what if they give you a question about a patient that has, that's like, you know, having recurrent infections and has albinism? What are you thinking about? Well, I hope you're thinking about like Chidiak Higashi disease, right? So Chidiak Higashi, right? This one can show up in both boys and girls on MBM exams because it's inherited in an autosomal recessive fashion, right? So these people tend to have like albinism, or instead of saying albinism on the test, they may make it a little harder and say that the person has like diffuse skin hypopigmentation. And one thing you also want to remember is that this is a problem with neutrophils, okay? This is a problem with neutrophils. And really, the pathophysiology is it kind of involves these there are these genes known as like the LYST. It's like the LYST gene, so LYST, like the LYST gene, or you can see like the Chidiak Higashi syndrome 1 gene, so like the CHS1 gene, right? So you have mutations in those genes, and essentially when you have those mutations, you begin to have problems like making or storing like secretory granules. So the thing is, your neutrophils are dysfunctional because They don't, because remember, your neutrophils, right? When the way your neutrophils effectively work is they have oxidative bursts going for them, but another thing they do is like they degranulate, and when they degranulate, they release a lot of stuff into their surroundings that is super toxic, right? So if you have problems with like making those secretory granules, or problems like storing those secretory granules, then the person will be in trouble, right? So so when those neutrophils again cannot degranulate, right, you begin to, you know, get a lot of infections. And really, for the most part, Chidiya Kigashi, you know, it tends to be fatal in childhood. There are very few of these kids that live to like an adult age. And again, classic presentation, albinism, right? They may have like all these like heat rashes, and these kids that have this tend to have like blonde hair. They tend to have like blue eyes. So those are all like classic things you may see. And the thing is, these people, they tend to have like very nasty intellectual disability, and they also tend to get, again, a lot of like malignancies, especially like leukemias and lymphomas, right? Like almost like a lymphoproliferative syndrome these people tend to get, and that again kills them. Again, there are many other things that kill a person on Chidiya Kigashi, but that's kind of like the classic presentation you want to remember. And then one thing that can be a throwback from the USMLE Step 1 exam that your friends at the MBME may want to throw on a Step 2 CK exam is they may tell you that, oh, they do a peripheral smear and they notice giant granules in neutrophils. Okay, essentially, like if you see like giant granules in like any of your white blood cells on like a, you know, like a blood smear or bone marrow biopsy or thingy, you really do want to think about, especially in an albino kid with recurrent infections, you really do want to think about a Chidiya Kigashi syndrome. Those are like the big things they tend to throw. They tend to throw on the USMLE exams. And then to round this up, I guess I can talk about the George syndrome. This one, the third and fourth pharyngeal pouches do not develop, right? So these people have no thymus, they have no parathyroids, right? So this thing can present in many ways on the USMLE exams, right? So these people, you know, they can have like seizures from like hypocalcemia, like newborn with seizures from hypocalcemia. Or they may show you an EKG, right? They'll have like a prolonged QT interval from the hypocalcemia, right? And then they'll have, again, recurrent like viral and fungal infections because their T cells don't work very well. And again, remember, it's the third and fourth pharyngeal pouches that do not develop, right? And remember, the mutation is in chromosome 22, right? So, and you can really make the diagnosis with like FISH, so like fluorescence in situ hybridization studies, right? And there's this catch-22 mnemonic you've probably heard about, right? So what does catch-22 stand for? So the thing is, these people, they tend to have like, the C stands for like cardiac issues, right? So they have like tetralogy of Fallot, they may have truncus arteriosus, they may have VSDs, they may have transposition of the great vessels. The A stands for the abnormal facies, right? So they tend to have like, you know, facial defects. And then the T is for the thymic aplasia, right? So they'll have an absent thymic shadow on a newborn chest X-ray. And then the next letter C kind of stands actually for cleft palate, right? These people tend to have cleft palate. And then the H stands for the hypoparathyroidism, right? Because again, the third and fourth pharyngeal pouches do not develop, so they don't have development of their parathyroid glands, right? So they essentially have a hypoparathyroidism, right? And I don't think they'll ever put this on a USMLE exam, but if they really wanted to like mess with your head, there is a disease that looks an awful lot like DeGeorge. It's called like velocardiofacial syndrome. You know, these people have like the cleft palates, they'll have the cardio problems, they'll have the intellectual disability. They'll have many of the same findings as DeGeorge, but they may not necessarily have the hypocalcemia, right? Like the hypoparathyroidism. So that may be like a somewhat unique differentiating feature. But really, there are some studies that actually show that velocardiofacial syndrome is actually kind of like on a spectrum, like DeGeorge as well. So, but that's about as much as I'll say about VCFS. And I think I'll kind of leave it at that. And then, actually, people that have DeGeorge syndrome, the most common cause of death actually ends up being like congenital heart disease. Not necessarily like, you'll think that, oh, infections will be the most common cause of death. It's actually not. Infection is actually the second most common cause of death in people with DeGeorge. The most common cause is actually the congenital heart diseases that tend to be associated with DeGeorge syndrome. And then one other thing I guess maybe I'll go ahead and throw in here is, if they give you a question about a patient that has, like terminal complement component deficiencies. So like C5 to C9. Remember, these people tend to have recurrent infections with like Neisseria organisms. You kind of want to make sure these people have like the meningococcal vaccine, just to, again, kind of protect them. And really, like the Shin organisms, they also need vaccinations against those, because those terminal complement components, they also help you deal with encapsulated organisms, right? So again, these are all high yield things you want to keep, at the back of your mind. So I'm going to go ahead and stop here. I think I've, mostly talked about all the high yield immunodeficiency diseases you may see on your test. As I do at the end of every podcast, I offer tutoring for a ton of exams. Step 1, Step 2 CK, Step 2 CS, Step 3. And then like the preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. And then there are these things I call USMLE booster courses that I offer for, again, all three USMLE exams. Like something where, again, if you're at the end of your dedicated period, or you feel like, okay, I know most of the material well, I want someone to put everything together for me, let's use like clinical vignettes and like a rapid fire Q&A format to discuss like must know concepts, high yields that you'll very likely see on your exam. Reach out to me regarding that course, and we can arrange for that. It's 10 hours for Step 2 CK and Step 3, and 20 hours for Step 1. And then if you're a medicine resident, I also tutor for the medicine board exams, the medicine training exam. And if you're, like a first, second, or third year med student, I also do this thing called longitudinal tutoring, where I tutor you for like your block exams, your shelf exams. But at the same time, I tutor you for the upcoming USMLE exam you have. Again, many of the people I've done this with, you've been like wildly successful on tests. So if that's something you're interested in, feel free to reach out to me. And then if you're a med student applying to residency, so like an ERAS application, or a college student applying to med school, so an AMCAS application, I do offer like one-on-one advising, tutoring for these things. Like rec letters, personal statement edits and writing, editing applications, mock interviews. And then finally, if you have like a college buddy that needs tutoring for general chemistry, organic chemistry, physics, physiology, biochemistry, histology, physiology, I do offer tutoring for all those things. So I wish you all the best. Thank you for listening to this podcast. And again, like I said in like two podcasts ago, these podcasts are now all available on like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and like Google Podcasts. I think it's like Google Play Music after all is said and done. So have a wonderful rest of your day. I'm pretty excited for the MBE season that's getting started soon. I'll see you next time. Have a good night, and God bless you. Thank you.